Don't your arms get tired?
Only conductors who are out of work hurt in their arms.
Imagine what would happen if you raised interest rates very high.
You made up your mind who you're going to vote for yet?
And made it much more expensive to borrow.
There are three things that will save the world.
Fired up! Can't take it no more!
Truth, goodness, and beauty.
You can walk 360 degrees by circling the pole and claim you have walked around the world.
All things considered, there's more to news than meets the eye.
All things considered, tonight and every night at 5 here on WHYY-FM, Philadelphia.
It's 3 o'clock. Good afternoon. My name is Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. And in just a moment, we'll be joined by a very special guest, Tony Bennett.
Let the drums roll out, let the trumpet call, while the people shout, strike up the band. Hear the cymbals ring, call them one and all, to the marshal swing, strike up the band. There is work to be done, let's have fun, fun, fun. You son of a gun of a gun, take your stand. Fall in line, oh, come on, let's go. Hey, leader, strike up the band. To be done, let's have fun, fun, fun. Come on, son of a gun, take your stand. Fall in line, oh, come on, let's go. Hey, Mr. Leader, hey, Mr. Leader, please take up the
The Gershwin Strike Up the Band, Tony Bennett with the Count Basie Orchestra. And Tony Bennett will be with us in just a moment on Fresh Air. This afternoon on Fresh Air at about 4 o'clock, we'll be joined by Suzanne Gordon, author of the new book Off Balance, The Real World of Ballet. She writes, quote, I discovered there was as much anguish as art in ballet, and that the anguish was created by the ballet establishment. It was not inherent in the art, unquote. Gordon writes about the low pay received by all but the superstar dancers, the constant dance injuries which can lead to problems with dependence on painkillers, and how many women dancers have become anorexics in their efforts to maintain the hipless, breastless, skinny body that is the ideal for American women ballet dancers. More at about 4 o'clock. Rock critic Ken Tucker will be with us at 3:40 for this week's edition of Hearing Secret Harmonies. As far as the Fresh Air staff is concerned, one of the high points of our show was Tony Bennett's visit last fall, and I'm delighted to say that he's here for a return visit. The occasion is his upcoming performances in Atlantic City. Tony Bennett will be at the Sands Hotel and Casino Memorial Day weekend. That's Friday, May 27th through Sunday, May 29th. Tony Bennett is one of the best interpreters of American popular song, and throughout his career he's performed the work of such composers as the Gershwins, Rodgers and Hart, Julie Stein, Harold Arlen, even when record company executives were urging him to replace those, quote, old-fashioned songs with cover recordings of current hits. Today we're going to be playing some recordings that span his career and talking about the music, the composers, and lyricists. Let's open with a recording of My Heart Stood Still by Rodgers and Hart. This is from an album Tony Bennett recorded in the mid-1970s with the Ruby Braff George Barnes Quartet.
You don't know that I felt good when we up and parted. You don't know I knocked on wood, gladly brokenhearted. Worrying is through, I sleep all night, appetite and health restored. You don't know how much I'm bored. The sleepless nights, the daily fights, the quick toboggan when you reach the heights. I miss the kisses and I miss the bites. I wish I were in love again. The broken dates, the endless waits, the lovely loving and the hateful hates, the conversation with the flying plates. I wish I were in love again. No more pain, no more strain. Now I'm sane, but I would rather be Gaga, the pulled out fur of Cat and Kerr, the fine mismating of him and her. I've learned my lesson, but I wish I were in love again. The furtive sigh, the blackened dye, the words I love you till the day I die, the self-deception that believes the lie. I wish I were in love again. When love congeals, it soon reveals the faint aroma of performing seals, the double crossing of a pair of heels. I wish I were in love again. No more care, no despair. Well, I'm all there now, but I'd rather be punch drunk. Believe me, sir, I much prefer the classic battle of him and her. I don't like quiet, and I wish I were in love again. I wish I were in love again. See, things work out for the best.
That was "I Wish I Were in Love Again," Rodgers and Hart. And Tony Bennett is my special guest. And I want to remind you that he'll be performing Memorial Day weekend at the Sands Hotel and Casino. That's Friday, May 27th through Sunday, May 29th. Tony Bennett, welcome back to Fresh Air. It's such a special thing to have you here.
Thank you very much.
I want to talk to you about records you've recorded and the material that you sing. So let's start with Rodgers and Hart. You've recorded on your own former record label, Improv, two albums of Rodgers and Hart songs. So I imagine that they're composers whose material is very special to you.
Yes. Well, there's nothing like a good Rodgers and Hart song.
How have you discovered all their songs? Is it from hearing it or from like going through sheet music of their songs?
Well, it happened just one way to get a great education in popular music is to live in New York City. Now, you know, the first thing you do is migrate to Richard Rodgers, and especially all the connoisseurs, all the great vocal coaches that you might meet, musicians that you respect, they all end up saying, "Oh, Rodgers and Hart, well, that's really the best," you know. And if you're looking to do the best for the public, you migrate to Rodgers and Hart. And it becomes a challenge. It took me maybe 20 years before I dared say, I think I'm able to sing Rodgers and Hart. It takes many years to learn how to do it.
Usually sing the verse of a song before you sing the song. Do you usually see a relationship between the verse and the song itself? Because so many times people are really surprised by how the verse sounds when they're unfamiliar with it.
Well, I'm always thrown a little by it. Sometimes someone will play a game with me and say, what song do you think this is? And it's so clever. And if I'm not familiar with the verse, I'll really get stuck on what the chorus is. But sometimes there is a hint of it in the verse. I think that the best verse I've ever heard was written by Ira Gershwin on my favorite tune, "All Love Is Here to Stay." He says, "The more I read the papers, the less I comprehend the world and all its capers and where it soon will end. Nothing seems to be lasting, but that isn't our affair. We've got something permanent, I mean in the way we care."
Someone was saying here recently, director Peter Bogdanovich, that he thought that popular songs were the last place where you can really have a love poem and get away with it because people are so afraid of being sentimental. But in a song, you can do it.
But isn't that a terrible statement, that people are afraid of being sentimental? I mean, what is wrong with enjoying your life? I mean, there's something wrong with that. If it's out of fashion, maybe we have to change the fashion a little. I think the more you could go toward warmth rather than coolness, the better off you are.
You've recorded two albums of Rodgers and Hart songs. When you were with Columbia Records and were working with Mitch Miller during that period, did he choose the songs? I'm thinking here of two stories that I've heard. One is Rosemary Clooney telling the story about how he insisted that she record "Come On to My House." And sure, it was a smash hit, but I never got the impression she much liked the song. And then Peggy King told a story on this program about how she wanted to record Cry Me a River. And Mitch Miller said, no, 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 that's not a very good song, and it's got the word plebeian in it. No one will understand it. Don't record it. And she missed out on a song that became a great hit.
You know, I must admit, I'm a little angered over the music business kind of pointing a finger toward Mitch Miller, because he's contributed an awful lot to the music business. He gave tremendous musicality to arrangers like Percy Faith, Frank Duvall, to Alec Wilder. He made sure every artist recorded an Alec Wilder song. He created a whole string of hits for many artists, including Rosie Clooney. He had Rosie Clooney and I do the first country record that was never done before with strings, so it was certified.
Which song was that?
Cold, Cold Heart, and she did half as much. He had Rosie Clooney record with Duke Ellington. He had me record with Count Basie. He found Errol Garner. He put Errol Garner in focus and made the first time an LP ever went 250,000 albums, which was unheard of in those days. And that no one knew that album, popular albums, could ever sell that much. And he did that with Errol Garner. So he made a lot of tremendous contributions to pop music, including playing on the famous Charlie Parker records. While everybody was putting him down, there's something that I really haven't analyzed. I don't think I ever will. They've all imitated him. Today, when you look at the charts, it says produced by. The producer is almost more important than the artist. And now every artist has a producer, which is a lot more terrible than anything that Mitch Miller could ever do, because it's almost like every artist has to have a warden now. And you have to go past this producer who thinks he's better than the artist, instead of trusting the artist and letting the artist become who he is. So it's funny, while they were putting him down, they all ran around the corner and snuck out and did exactly what he did. And it's strange that that they gave him such a bad mark.
So you still think highly of Mitch Miller?
Yeah, he never, you know, he kind of stayed away from any kind of real junk music, and he made sure that if it was a good music, it was a good Doris Day record or a good Joe Stafford record. And he made a lot of things happen.
Let's move on to another recording, and this is we're going to hear My Foolish Heart, which you recorded with Bill Evans in the first of your two records together. Why don't we listen to the record and then talk about it after it plays? And performing is my guest, Tony Bennett, who will be featured at the Sands Hotel on the upcoming Memorial Day weekend.
The scene is set for dreaming. Love's knocking at the door. But oh my heart, I'm reluctant to start, for we've been fooled before. The night is like a lovely tune. Beware my foolish heart. How white the ever constant moon. Take care my foolish heart. There's a line between love and fascination that's hard to see on an evening such as this. For they both give the very same sensation when you're lost in the magic of a kiss. Her lips are much too close to mine. Beware my foolish heart. But should our eager lips combine, then let the fire start. For this time it isn't fascination or a dream that will fade and fall apart. It's love. This time it's love, my foolish heart. This time it isn't fascination nor a dream that will fade and fall apart. It's love. This time it's love, my foolish heart.
Tony Bennett and Bill Evans from the Tony Bennett, Bill Evans first album. That was My Foolish Heart with music by Ned Washington and a lyric by Victor Young. If you're just joining us, Tony Bennett will be performing at the Sands on Memorial Day weekend if you'd like to hear him. How come you chose this song? I consider this to be the definitive version of Foolish Heart.
Well, there wasn't any plan to it. We just found a whole group of songs, and we said, let's just do songs that we like. And we looked through these song books. He told me to leave my cronies home. I didn't know I had any, but he said, leave everybody home, and let's go up to San Francisco, just you and I, and get in the studio, just like we are this today. And he said, not have anything interrupt us. And it was a musicale for 2 or 3 days. We just, at random, just found songs that we said decided on. And when we looked through a whole group of songs, I said, how about My Foolish Heart? And he said, fine. And then he would work on it for a couple of hours with me and find out the key. And we'd make a little production up on it. And when we felt we had kind of an outline, a sketch of what we wanted to do, then we'd turn to the engineer, Don Cody, and we'd say to him, let's do one.
How many takes did you do of that?
There were usually 3 or 4 takes, and then we'd choose which one we liked.
You'd listen back to them?
Mm-hmm. There's no splicing, it's no editing from one tape to another. It's all one cut, finally. But we'd do about 4 takes on each band of the record.
The composers of My Foolish Heart, Washington and Young, wrote some other popular songs, but they're not mm-hmm. known in the way Rodgers and Hart are.
Right.
Are they composers whose work you've followed or sought out? Do you think of them as having
Victor
special
Young
stuff?
He was a big movie writer, you know, a tremendous movie writer. When I Fall in Love, he wrote The Street of Dreams. You know, he's a wonderful, wonderful writer. And he was a very eccentric guy that was so incongruous, you'd never think of him as writing love songs. You know, he was one of these kind of growly type guys with a cigar in his mouth who loved to play pinochle and, you know, he'd have that kind of voice, you know, and real tough, tough guy, you know.
So you knew him?
I never knew him, but I heard a lot about him. And he just was the most incongruous guy because he was like a little tough guy, and yet he wrote all these beautiful, sensitive, lovely songs.
Do you like to know composers whose work you're singing?
Oh, yes. Because, you see, what you have to do is do what the composer has in mind. And the more you could analyze it and trace him down and find out exactly what the composer thought of when he was doing the song. And each composer has a different, like Richard Rodgers, when he was alive, he just wanted to make sure that the artist did it exactly like he wrote it. He didn't want any changes. Whereas Harold Arlen is completely different. Harold Arlen said, hey, look, use my song as a tool. Do it any way you want. You want to jazz it up, you want to waltz it up, whatever you want to do with it, just as long as it works for you. He didn't care how much you improvised on it. So each artist, each composer is completely different with how they want their songs interpreted. But the golden rule with being a popular singer is to do what the composer had in mind. Try and interpret his song the way he would have liked to have had it done.
You have beautiful enunciation with the lyrics that you sing, but the enunciation is never overstated in any way. Do you do that consciously? And are there syllables or vowels, consonants that you know have to be accentuated?
Only if they have a musical sound. I'm always thinking of how beautiful can I make this sound? You know, if it sounds musical, I'll lean on the vowels very much, you know. They're beautiful vowel sounding. Any sounds that are a great excuse to make it sound even more musical, I'll kind of accent a sound that really sounds like an O or, you know, an ah. It's a musical sound. It's a musical, it's almost like the Italian language, a very musical sound. And I try and stay away from anything hard or difficult, you know. I'll drop that and minimize that, but I'll really lean on the more melodic sounding vowels. And I really, Joe Jones gave me a tip, the great drummer. He said, just really concentrate on the word love and don't worry about the other words. He said, they all come out anyway.
Let's listen to another recording, and we're going to hear a Johnny Mercer song that was a great hit for you. And this is I Want to Be Around. So let's listen to it, and then we'll talk about it
okay. After
we hear it.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me, who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine. And that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet, as I sit there applauding from a front row seat. When somebody breaks your heart like you broke mine.
Want to Be Around, sung by Tony Bennett. And my guest is Tony Bennett, and he'll be performing at the Sands Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City on Memorial Day weekend. What's a Johnny Mercer song? Can you tell us the story of how it was written?
Oh, there's a terrific story connected with that particular song. Sadie Vimmerstedt is a housewife in Youngstown, Ohio. And she wrote a fan letter to Johnny Mercer. And she said, I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. She said, Johnny, she said, that sounds like you. And she said, please write a song with that idea in mind. She's an amateur songwriter. So he loved the letter, and he loved the whole idea of it. It sounded like Johnny Mercer. He finished the song and gave her 50% of the song. And luckily, I Want to Be Around came out after I Left My Heart in San Francisco. So it took a big ride. It became a hit, all you know, as big as San Francisco, you know, sales-wise. And Sadie Vimmerstedt is still collecting royalties and takes trips all over the world and goes to Greece, and I get cards from her in all these wonderful places, far-off places, and once a year she'll take a vacation with the royalties of that song.
How did you get to record the song?
Well, because Mercer got it to me, and he was, I mean, this is America's greatest, you know, music poet. I don't know anyone who can endorse what the definition of true talent is more than Johnny Mercer. I mean, this man, you know, from Moon River with my Huckleberry Friend and all these wonderful catchphrases that are truly Americana. And, oh, my God, he wrote Black Magic and One for My Baby. But then he goes on, and as you keep looking at his repertoire and all these wonderful songs that he wrote, you just realize the contribution he made to America. He's a wonderful citizen of the United States.
I Want to Be Around is on a couple of my favorite jukeboxes in restaurants and bars in town, so I still get to hear it quite a bit. I was wondering if you get to go to places that have jukeboxes, or being as famous as you are, if you have to stay away from places like that.
Well, you have to watch it, but I do go to a lot of... I like to just hang out a lot, you know. I don't like walking in with a whole entourage and chasing people out of a place because I walk in. When I'm off the stage, I like to keep a low profile and just go and hang out, have a drink, you know. So I do go into a lot of places where there are jukeboxes and where the people are real down. I like going in Greenwich Village. I hang out in the Village a lot, and I like different pubs that I go to, and friends of mine, artists, rubbing shoulders with different artists down there. It's a lot of fun for me.
Is there a trick to hanging out in a place and not calling attention to yourself?
Well, yeah, it's all according. If it gets too hectic, I just turn around and say, hey, well, let's take it easy, you know. But there are a lot of, you'd be surprised how many people are nice enough to respect your privacy if you don't make a big deal out of the fact that you're showing up somewhere. You just walk in, and if you do it in an understated way, people... Yep, they might get a little enthused because there's a celebrity there, but then they realize, hey, he really wants to just have a drink or be left alone, have a salad or something like that. And you'd be surprised how many people are thoughtful like that and leave you alone and still knocked out that you're there, but they don't bother you. You might get a few autographs, but that doesn't bother me.
Did you know I Want to Be Around would be a hit? Could you guess that?
You never know. It's up to the distributor. It's up to the public, finally, you know. It's up to how many times it's played on the radio. It's what kind of campaign, the timing of things. If you have to get lucky and all of a sudden, no matter what you do is right, you know, you could get into these bags where everything you do starts becoming right. It's happened to me a couple of times in my career, and I've been fortunate to have the public on my side. You know, thank God for them. They've always supported me, and it's so wonderful.
Let's listen to another recording. This is one with Basie, and we're going to hear you singing Lerner and Lowe's I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face. So, again, let's listen to it, and we'll talk about it afterwards. And my guest is Tony Bennett. The session was from the mid-1950s with the Count Basie Band.
I've grown accustomed to her face. She almost makes the day begin. I've grown accustomed to the tune. She whistles night and noon. Her smiles, her frowns, her ups, her downs are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in, I was serenely independent and content before we met. Surely I could always be that way again, and yet I've grown accustomed to her looks, accustomed to her voice, accustomed to her face. One can always break, and yet I've grown accustomed to the trace of something in the air, accustomed to her face.
Tony Bennett with the Count Basie Band, recorded in the mid-1950s, Lerner and Lowe's I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face, from the musical My Fair Lady. That's a song I thought of myself as not liking until I heard your version of it.
Thank you.
What attracted you to the song?
Well, I was in love at the time. I'm always in love for one thing or another, either life or people. So I was very much in love, and I just thought of this one person that I was in love with when I sang it. And it was just, it made it all happen. But Ralph Sharon, who found all my songs for me right through the seasons, and a magnificent, underrated, very underrated piano player, very underrated, unless someone has enough ears to hear him and realizes how good he is. Recently we did a TV show just with the trio, and boy, I'm telling you, his piano sounded like a 15-piece band. I mean, it's amazing how big a sound he gets. But he did the arrangement for the Count Basie sessions that we did. And he wrote that arrangement. And maybe he gave it the flavor that you really wanted to hear, that you weren't impressed with the song before that. And maybe it's just that arrangement that might have been.
I think
been
it was your singing, frankly.
Well, thanks.
I like
yeah.
the arrangement, but I think it was your singing.
Thanks.
I remember on the show Abby Lincoln had said that when she sings a lyric, she feels like she really has to believe the lyric, because if you sing songs, you become those songs. Like, you start living what it is that you sing. And on the other hand, Mabel Mercer says that when she sings a lyric, she doesn't live the song. It's a song, it's well crafted, and she sings it, and she won't even change the gender. You know, if it's a love song that's written to a woman, she'll sing it with that gender. Where do you fit in with that? Do you feel like you live your songs, or
I'll reiterate that I try and do what the composer has in mind. I do change the lyrics to make them. If I love a song and it's really written for a woman, for instance, a song like No One Has Ever Done This. There's a song that Johnny Mercer wrote, When a Woman Loves a Man. Now, I don't have to change the lyric on that, but most women sing that song. They understand that. The women sing that song. But yet a man can sing that song, because it's about women who love men individually and fall in love with one man. And I like it. And I'll probably end up singing it soon. I just gravitate to it sounds terribly unintellectual, but if I get goosebumps, there's something to it. You know, if something moves me, if I hear a song or a performance that I really like, I'll just say there's something to it. Let's get into that song.
I find as a radio producer, there's records that I really love that I feel uncomfortable playing because the lyrics are so offensive in one way or another. Some of them because they're so incredibly sexist, and others because, like in Shaking the Blues Away, the verses, there's an old superstition way down south. Every darky believes that troubles won't stay if you shake them away. It's just offensive to hear lyrics like that. Does that ever happen to you that you like a lyric, but you just can't? You don't want to sing it?
Oh, plenty of times. Yeah, there's certain songs you just really have. There's one, The Glory Road, you know, was Paul Robeson made famous years ago, and it's a tremendous spiritual song that stops a show right in its tracks. It's a fantastic song, but, you know, it has all the Glory Road and all that Eisenmuggen kind of language, you know, that were written for that. So it was pronounced, exaggerated, that a black man sings this song, you know. It was quite an insult. I mean, it's dated now. So I did correct it. When I sang it, you know, instead of saying the Glory Road, I'll say the Glory Road, which is the correct way, you know, and it's still a dynamite song. That happens, you know, that happens. It does, it gets, some of these things are terribly dated and terribly offensive.
Does sexism ever give you any trouble in songs?
No. No, I never really understood it. It's something that I guess a lot of people are preoccupied with, but it's not a mystery to me. It's life is a mystery, you know, but as to what the correct protocol is, I don't have any inhibitions about that.
Let's listen to another one of your songs, and this is another one that I really didn't have much feeling for as a song, but I've changed my mind about it after hearing you singing it.
Thank you.
And it's Julie Stein's Make Someone Happy, which yeah. I also thought of as being a kind of pleasant but corny song, but I don't know, you invest something in it that gives it a lot more musical depth than I thought it had.
Well, I think Bill Evans had a lot to do with that, you know, the way he plays that piano. I mean, he'll just make everything sound so believable. And also, it's a kind of philosophy. It is a cliche, and it sounds corny, but it really works. When you give, you get. I mean, it's funny. It's like, you know, it's like all the Oriental philosophies in the world will kind of bring this out. You know, it brings it out. I mean, if you take chance and contribute somehow or other in an incongruous way, you get a reward for it. Something comes back at you by contributing. And for that simple reason, that's why I like pop songs so much. Instead of writing a whole intellectual novel, or an essay on, or a book on something like that, sometimes in 32 bars you get the whole essence. It's almost like haiku poetry.
Well, let's hear Julie Stein's Make Someone Happy with Tony Bennett and Bill Evans, and this is from their second album together.
Make someone happy, make just one someone happy, make just one heart the heart you sing to. One smile that cheers you, one face that lights when it's near you, one girl your everything. To fame, if you win it, comes and goes in a minute. Where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer. Someone to love is the answer. Once you've found her, build your world around her. Make someone happy. Make just one someone happy. And you will
be happy too. Comes and goes in a minute. Where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer. Someone to love is the answer. Once you found a build your world around a just one someone happy, and you will be happy too.
Tony Bennett with Bill Evans from the second of two records that they recorded together, and that one is on a album record label called Improv, which was a label that Tony Bennett co-owned in the mid-1970s. How did the second session happen after you recorded the first album with Bill Evans?
Well, it was received so well by the connoisseurs of the music business, you know, that we decided to do a second album. And luckily that we did, because now we have two full albums of, you know, a good 24 sides or so of Bill Evans and myself. And there's something I cherish very much. I just love it. I just love the fact that I sang with Bill Evans.
Do you wish that there were, like, singles released from some of those records that became smash hits in the way that your pop records have?
No, not really. It's really kind of two different mediums. You know, the pop scene is one where you run after the numbers and you get on the top of the charts and it becomes famous and all that. Where this is, becomes like standard catalog. I mean, through the seasons, they'll play this 50 years from now and it'll still sound fresh and not dated because of the understatedness of it and the great musicianship of Bill. And it has a beautiful quality to it. It was compared to German Lieder singing, which I was shocked to have this compared to kind of classical singing, because it's popular music, and I was very honored that it was treated with such respect.
Yeah, I just lost my train of thought for
right.
a second. You had your own record label in the 70s, and now you re-released some of the records from Columbia on a label of your own. So how do you get the rights to your own recordings? Is that hard to do?
Well, I own them.
Oh, you own them?
I own them, yes.
Was that the agreement at the start when you recorded them?
Yeah. And now John Hammond has commissioned me to make an album, a couple of albums with his company. So I'm back on CBS, and this fall we'll release another album.
I was looking at some photographs of you the other day, mm-hmm. and one of them is you with some real Bobby Soxer-looking type fans. How have your fans changed in the years that you've been singing, and the nature of fandom?
Well, you know, at first, you just go through the whole syndrome. I mean, it was pretty funny. For the first 5 years of my career, there was just one loud scream throughout the United States. That's all I remember. I'd be singing these soft little sweet songs like Blue Velvet, and no one was listening. They just screamed at me, you know. I'd get to a town, and it was all Bobby Soxes and all this. That's the beauty and the adventure of the whole entertainment business, is that you finally take on all the challenges and you finally go from one challenge to another, one group. And then after doing so many shows at the Paramount Theater, 7 shows a day and all that, I decided to work for the family rather than for one group, instead of the teenage group. You know, I started thinking in terms of singing for the whole family so that the grandparents could understand it, the teenagers can, the husbands and wives can, and the children. And it's much more enjoyable now to me to sing for the whole family than to one group, demographic group.
So how did your material change?
Well, it hasn't changed that much, funny enough. I kind of did songs that everybody liked, but I do put an accent on family entertainment. I like any performer who thinks in terms of, instead of one little group or one little clique, I like anything that has a universality to it. I mean, in the realm of genius, I could think of Charlie Chaplin, who can communicate with anybody through pantomime.
You're a very busy person, on the road a lot of the time. Have you like hired people to take care of a lot of your needs? You know, like home design and house cleaning and finding a wardrobe for you, things like that.
No, I do pretty much that myself. I do have my nephew, Tom Chiappa. He does all my sound and my lights for me, and he does a wonderful job. And I have my trio. And I like kind of an economical point of view. I don't like, you know, I just kind of like an understated way of doing things. Lately, more and more I'm playing with my trio wherever I play. I really like that.
When you're famous and you have money, you can, like, have other people do your laundry and have other people shop for you and things like that. What are the things you want to keep for yourself to do and the things that you want to farm out to others?
Well, I love to paint. I love to do everything by hand myself. I love to paint, and I love to play tennis, and I love my music. So that keeps me pretty busy, and it's enviable to a lot of people because I'm in that, what I hear is that 1% group where I'm doing something that I love and I'm getting paid for it. And this is what I like doing. I like working hard, but I like working hard at something I love to do very much.
You're going to be performing at Atlantic City at the Sands in Memorial Day weekend. What kind of repertoire will you be doing then?
Well, funny enough, I think I found myself today. I found a little hint as to who I am. I was being interviewed a little earlier, and someone said to me, what kind of a singer are you? And I said, well, I'm from New York City. In New York City, the schooling you get usually is from a black teacher or a Jewish teacher. And in my life, I've gotten to love the teachers I had. I had some wonderful teachers, very bright and very with it. And I said, I'm an Italian of Italian descent, and I sing black and Jewish music. This is what I do. I'm very influenced by the jazz artists, but I love the music of Gershwin, Harold Arlen, Irving Berlin, Arthur Schwartz. These are the composers of the 30s, you know, just fester my mind. They just kept me going creatively. I'm in love with the music that they wrote and what they contributed to the United States, to the greatest ambassadors to the United States, for the United States. I go to places as far off as Japan, Manila, Australia, no matter where I go in the world, France, any foreign country, if I sing Dancing in the Dark by Arthur Schwartz, everybody knows that song. They know Cole Porter's Night and Day, you know. Those composers of the Broadway stage and the movies, those songs that were written for Fred Astaire, are just the songs I'm in love with. Yes, every once in a while I'll go crazy for a guy like Stevie Wonder, you know, and think he's just a terrific interpreter and performer. But most of the time I get right back to saying, hey, look, these are not old songs, they're just great songs. I also think of them as America's folk songs. I think they're the true folk songs. And what a level of folk music. What a high level of popular music. It's a great, more mature kind of popular music, you see. And it's something that'll never die out, because as long as we're existing on this planet, our songs will just become more and more amplified through the years.
When you said Jewish music, I thought you were going to talk about cantors.
Yeah, well, I studied with cantors.
Did you really?
Yeah, at the American Theater Wing. I studied with 15 cantors for 3 years, and I studied sight singing with the cantors, and they're magnificent singers, you see.
How did you get to study with cantors?
Well, it was the American Theater Wing, and it was under the GI Bill of Rights, and they were all studying sight singing, and the American Theater Wing is a wonderful school that teaches all kinds of forms of theatrical techniques, and they had a great school on sight singing.
Think that Helen influenced Jordan, you in any way?
Teacher Helen Jordan was a wonderful teacher.
Think all those cantors influenced you in any way?
Definitely, because they sing in a healthy way. They're very healthy singers, and they sing correct. You see, they sing with the bel canto thinking, and you really learn how to place your voice right. You never hurt your voice with it. You know, it becomes more and more magnificent as you go along. Now, whether you sing opera or popular music, that bel canto training, there's nothing like it, because it keeps your voice healthy, and as you get older, you get better. It doesn't diminish like a sportsman, where you finally get weaker as you get older. If you do the scales, you'll get better and better and better, and it's a wonderful exercise that works.
Some people talk about like what makes a pop singer and what makes a jazz singer. I would think of you as a jazz singer, especially when you're singing with someone like Bill Evans, although you don't scat. Do you think that one needs to scat to sing jazz, and have you avoided that for any reason?
Well, scatting is like composing to me. I mean, everybody says, why don't you compose? You know, well, how can I compete with Cole Porter? And with scatting, how can I compete with Louis Armstrong? Or how can anyone? I mean, it's silly to just go scat up a dee pop doobity ba ba dap doob gap a doob doom bang. It doesn't impress me, you know, but when Louis does it, for some reason, it's a language. It's a musical language. And I'm so in such reverence to the way Louis did it that I'd rather just sit back and listen to him do it and enjoy that. And another thing is, the hardest thing Bobby Hacker taught me years ago, the great cornet player, the hardest thing to do is to sing the melody and make it believable. And that's the great challenge. To me, that's really scatting. You know, when you could hold on to what the composer had in mind and not change the notes and make it believable and sound fresh. It's more of a challenge. It's easy to just throw in a bleep-blop every once in a while. It's easy to do that. It's much more difficult to just sing the words.
Well, I love your singing, and I want to
thank you very much for
visiting with us. Really,
I love your taste and your ears and your musicality, and thanks for being so wonderful to me. This is the second time we've done this, and I've enjoyed it more this time than the last time.
Great, thanks. I've really enjoyed it. Tony Bennett has been my guest, and he will be performing at the Sands Hotel and Casino May 27th through 29th, and that is Memorial Day weekend. And we're going to close this segment with another recording from the first Bill Evans Tony Bennett album, and we'll be hearing some other time. Before we hear it, I just want to remind you that in just a couple of minutes, Ken Tucker will be with us for this week's edition of Hearing Secret Harmonies. And then at about 4:20, we'll be joined by Suzanne Gordon, author of the new book Off Balance, The Real World of Ballet. So this is Tony Bennett and Bill Evans.
Where has the time all gone to? Haven't done half the things we want to. Oh, well, we'll catch up some other time. This day was just a token. Too many words are still unspoken. Oh, we'll catch up some other time. just when the fun is starting, comes the time for parting. But let's be glad for what we've had and what's to come. There's so much more embracing still to be done, but time is racing. Oh, we'll catch up some other time. There's so much more embracing still to be done, but time is racing. Oh, well, we'll catch up some other time.
Tony Bennett with Bill Evans from their first album together. And Tony Bennett, who was just with us, will be at the Sands Hotel and Casino Memorial Day weekend. That's Friday, May 27th through Sunday, May 29th. It's a minute to 4 o'clock, and this is Fresh Air on 91FM, WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll be joined by Suzanne Gordon, who's just written a new book called Off Balance, The Real World of Ballet. And she writes about how women are basically starving themselves, becoming anorexics, to meet with that breastless, hipless, skinny body that's expected in American ballet. She writes about the low pay ballet dancers receive, and also about the sometimes the dependence on drugs that is developed to kill the pain of the many injuries that the ballet dancers develop. That's coming up in about 20 minutes. Usually at 3:40 Wednesdays Wednesday afternoons on Fresh Air, rock critic Ken Tucker joins us for Hearing Secret Harmonies. We are running a little behind schedule this afternoon. Coming up, this week's edition of Hearing Secret Harmonies.
I'm Ken Tucker, and this is Hearing Secret Harmonies. Like a lot of you out there, I'm sure, I watched the 2-hour salute to Motown Records on Monday night on television, and except for the extraordinary performances by Michael Jackson and Marvin Gaye, I was struck by how many terrific opportunities had been missed. The show assembled people like Smokey Robinson, the original Jackson 5, Diana Ross, and an early version of the Supremes, the reconstituted Temptations, and the Four Tops, whose mighty lead singer, Levi Stubbs, was still in remarkable shape. But too often the show gave us mere snippets, a verse or two, of the music that many of us had grown up loving. The show got me pulling some of my Motown records down off the shelves and listening to them, and so this show will be about the music you didn't hear on that Motown TV special. The presiding eminence of Motown Records, of course, is company president Berry Gordy. Gordy was a struggling songwriter before he became a successful producer and then the founder of the first record label to really concentrate on promoting black pop artists. Nowadays, we don't think of Berry Gordy as a great songwriter, but he certainly did have his moments. He wrote or co-wrote some early Motown songs, and before that, he got his first big break when Jackie Wilson recorded a Berry Gordy song called Rite Petite. Gordy also co-wrote some of Jackie Wilson's biggest hits, including Lonely Teardrops and That's Why I Love You So. Jackie Wilson wasn't a Motown recording artist, but you can hear this song on the excellent new double album called The Jackie Wilson Story on Epic Records. This is Jackie Wilson singing Berry Gordy's Rite Petite.
Well, look at that, look at that, look.
That was Jackie Wilson singing Rite Petite, a song written by Motown Records president Berry Gordy. The other pervasive presence in Motown Records is Smokey Robinson, who had the record company's first hit and became an important executive in the company, as well as being one of the most expressive singers and most literate songwriters in pop music history. The song I wish I'd heard Smokey Robinson sing on that Monday night TV special is a slightly obscure one, not as well known to people who remember Smokey Robinson only for songs like The Tracks of My Tears, Ooh Baby Baby, I Second That Emotion. This song turned up, improbably enough, as the only bearable few moments in the movie American Gigolo a few years ago, when the haughty Richard Gere got dressed for the evening to the mysterious, implacable strains of Smokey Robinson and the Miracles singing "The Love I Saw in You Was Just a Mirage."
Two kisses.